might ask if there are any comments from the public.
I guess we have public here now.
We do have a public here.
We have public here. Are there any questions from the public?
No questions, but I appreciate your discussion. It rings true with what I'm thinking.
Great, thank you. Okay, so on to section two, please.
Perfect. Moving right along to part two is the portion of your zoning regulations that contain your permit processing procedures. So this establishes the processing procedures, the application procedures, and the requirements for all established permit types that are required under your zoning code. So what is included? So we have some just general provisions, and these are kind of helpful information that you should know prior to digging into the specifics of the various permit procedures we're talking about. We have a section on a chapter for reasonable accommodation, which I'll talk about. Then we dive into the actual permits that you could, whether those are ministerial or discretionary.
Question?
I had another highlight in that previous section, but it was down towards the bottom. It is just kind of a question for clarification because we had a recent project dealing with uncertainty of boundaries in the 10-1-5-0-5-0, page 14. Mm-hmm. And there's another area that I have highlighted that relates to this. So we had, I believe it was downriver near Happy Camp, and it was an issue dealing with setbacks.
Yes, we removed the setbacks of a subdivision map that was approved.
Correct. So on these boundaries, and I'm looking at it more on a unique stretch in Scott Valley, we have a county road on that is East Callahan Road, which is handled differently than East Side Road, even though it's a continuous road from Fort Jones to Callahan. It is county maintained. It is considered public. However, it is owned, once you get from Horn Lane all the way to Callahan, the road itself is owned by the landowners that it goes through, and which is different than from Horn Lane to Fort Jones, which the county owns the road. Thus why one is striped and the other is not. How, I'm trying to think how to ask this. I've had numerous discussions with Public Works where they have more or less been polite asking me to move a fence periodically, and no, I'm not going to, it's my land. And you don't own it, I'm giving you an easement to do what you need to do. How does that play in? Because I did a little research, I don't think that's the only instance. I think there are some cases downriver that are similar. Sawyer Cecil area are similar. It deals with the uncertainty of boundaries, but have the consultants looked at where ownership is county versus private and the relationship of those boundaries and setbacks?
You have that same thing going on right here in the city of Wairega. There's no delineation for the street. It shows the property owner going right into the center, and so the property owner.
Right.
So, it's all over, and even Highway 3.
Oh, yeah. Well, Highway 3 at my place, it's a center line. I own to the center line, and it's actually an easement with the state. Yeah. The state doesn't own it. Once again, from Aetna to Callahan. Yeah. That development was done differently than from Aetna to Fort Jones.
I would say specifically, right, we did not look at the standards for roadways that are privately owned on, or that are publicly accessible but on privately owned property. From the zoning perspective, I would say that's, it's not the territory that zoning would really want to get into either. I think zoning would want to specify would be what are the allowable land uses on your property, and then the development standards for development. Not necessarily, I would say additional road requirements that would be better, I think, established in an easement agreement or in another county road standards, potentially established through a road standard for that are like publicly accessible roads on private property. I think that might be something that could be handled in another title of the code of ordinances, but it's a great question. I would defer ultimately to county staff and county council to see how it's been handled in other situations. But to answer your questions very specifically, no, our team did not look at how to handle privately owned roads, essentially on, or publicly owned, publicly accessible roads on private property.
I think that's something, and counselor, here's some homework for you. How do we add clarification, specifically as it relates to setbacks, boundaries within zoning? Ag, obviously different potentially than residential or commercial or heavy industrial. But we've got numerous areas in this county where that is very applicable. Where do we establish the setback from in those instances? Just for clarification going forward, so we have some, as Commissioner Hart always says, so we're firm, fair, and consistent mm-hmm. into the future with projects. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I had that highlighted and I didn't realize that the next section you're on is after this.
Well, this is perfect. This is exactly what we were hoping for. Let me just make a one note here.
On to permitting process. I'm caught up.
Okay. So we have just some general introductory provisions that start off part two, then goes into the actual permits in here. We'll establish how someone would go about applying for a permit, when does that, how the county determines if that application is complete, and then the next steps. Really, this is going to provide the commission some clarity as to what happens, but really it's also a beneficial tool for applicants so that they have some transparency as to what they can expect, what are the shot clock items, what are the review periods that they'll be subject to. And then in here we have standards for permit modification and revocation, which I'll talk about. These are just tools that would be pre or post action for a particular permit. Okay. So let's dive in here. Again, another organizational change that was made was grouping all of your entitlement provisions together in a single part. Right now they are adopted and codified and kind of sporadically throughout your existing code. So in here we grouped and we listed every entitlement required by the county. And then we listed the, and we specifically identified the applicable review authority. So whether that is that permit is going to be reviewed and taken action on by the Planning Commission or the board or the Planning Director, we've now built that in and clarified that throughout. We've also clarified who can submit applications. So really defining who is the applicant, who can submit appeals, just providing again further clarity and transparency. Really this has just been heard from previous questions and some previous misunderstandings and just clarifying that process. I would say the next then step was creating consistent structure within this section, in which we have created procedures of how one would go about submitting an application, how the county would review that application for completeness, then how the county would go about acting upon that. If it had multiple discretionary bodies, what is the system for approval? What would happen if your permit needed to go for a public hearing? The types of noticing that would be required, and then these post-approval actions. So one of the items that we brought in for state law compliance, just to create that consistency, is we've better articulated the process that the county has to go through for compliance with CEQA, that is your California Environmental Quality Act. Basically, any application that comes into the county, there has to be some level of review to see if there's going to be an environmental impact, to see if that that entitlement is exempt or is already covered by another environmental review. So we've just clearly established that process that the state requires jurisdictions go through, and we've spelled that out in an established section, because it is a requirement and it is a necessary step that every application goes through, but clearly articulating that was we felt was best practice and helpful.
Excuse me real quick. What, do you know which code section under part two the CEQA list is?
Yes. I believe this would be listed in section 10.20.080, entitled Environmental Review.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay, I'm having a hard time following your presentation.
Let me help you.
Okay, please.
So he's in. So you're in section two right now, and then these are the numbers.
While they're talking about that, you've just covered this. It was a
20.
It's so pertinent for my previous question. It was up under, where's my blue highlight?
I see that last page.
Right here. On the additional permits may be required 10.20.030, specifically with zoning code encroachment permits. That is why I brought up the previous question.
Sure.
Because in those areas where the public road is owned privately, I do not, by law, have to get an encroachment permit onto the road, or even the state highway. I can put a gate wherever I want, and that needs to be protected. As opposed to another area which is state-owned or county-owned, I get it, you need to get an encroachment permit for ingress-egress. So but on a privately owned public roadway, we need to be clear on that.
Okay.
Counselor, that's why I brought up that question
what
prior.
What he's got up there, how would I answer on this page?
Specifically due to encroachment permits.
Yeah, that helps clarify. Okay. Okay. I wasn't sure I was going to talk to you.
Okay. Yeah. It, right. When we got to this, it was like, yep, that's why I brought it up previously.
Okay. I understand. More.
Okay.
Okay. We're good. He's got section two.
Okay.
And I guess in that same area, I also have highlighted in B, it has a mention of a grading permit.
Mm-hmm.
We do not have a grading permit. We don't have a grading ordinance.
Yeah, so it's that one of those discussions.
The question is,
right?
Are we going to be seeing a proposed grading ordinance
from supervisors?
Well, that's part of the discussion today, right? Do we want that? Do we not want that?
Okay, so this word grading was put in here in anticipation that there will be a discussion on that.
Yes.
And if it ends up not happening, then that grading will be stricken.
Yep,
okay,
absolutely.
I just wanted to be clear on that.
Sure, yeah, of course.
And Commissioner Hart has a timeout.
We went down this road before, long before anybody in this room here, but I was in the middle of it. It all goes right back to the ag community, going out and running land planes, discs, whatever on their ranches. Prime example would be Lassen Canyon Nursery with windblows, and all that sand. So I would suggest that the Planning Commission doesn't take that up. That's a political question. It needs to be answered and come from the supervisors before we take any direction and try to direct them.
Okay.
Because there's going to be political heat about that, and that doesn't belong here.
Okay.
So, Commissioner Hart, I would say with the grading ordinance, it would never be directed at agricultural activities. I think that grading ordinance, right, because you're describing plowing fields and stuff, mm-hmm. Our grading ordinance is going to be generally the purpose of something like that would be not allowing people to take the top of a mountain off. You know what I mean? What we see sometimes
is people... I understand
people,
where you're going, but I'm looking at the political climate and how it has changed in this county. The more influx we have of urban people coming in here and the change in the demographics, I can see them taking that and creating lots of legal problems for agriculture.
It's important.
And forestry.
This belongs at the Board of Supervisors.
Yeah. And I've worked in many counties with grading ordinances, and what ends up happening is we don't maintain our roads because of the added bureaucracy of getting a grading permit. It's a lot easier for us to go out and maintain. We still have to meet our water quality standards, but when you add yet another permit and we've got a very limited operating window, it doesn't work. If it was solely for residential, you know, bootlegging a road in through the forest to get to their house, I can see that. Although I would also offer that they need a timberland conversion permit, which they're not normally getting, and then that would have been mitigated to begin with. So I digress. But I think that I agree with you. I wouldn't bite that off mm-hmm. because not without direction from the Board of Supervisors.
Well,
otherwise you're going to get a lot of errors.
The dust yeah. versus grading is an issue, right?
Yes. But there's also another little entity called Regional Water Quality Control who are trying to implement roads in the land use practices. So there's another entity you're going to have to go deal with.
Yeah.
And until that gets sorted out, I'm not comfortable with it.
Yeah, I know just the background of this. The grading ordinance conversation came up during the dean's tenure because there was discussions of people going out and, like we said, just plowing the top of a mountain, preparing it for a festival, you know.
I've had for the last year and a half, there's two gentlemen that come out of Montague at 7 o'clock, go past the house, dragging heavy equipment, and they're going to the vistas.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Come back about 4 o'clock. It's on a daily basis.
Yes.
I know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. I'm not opposed to it, but it's still, we're given direction mm-hmm. from the elected officials to go there. I'm not willing to open that door.
Yeah. And there's other legal outside of the county grading mm-hmm. with some of the land use.
Yeah.
There's sure. state laws that are already supersede.
Yeah.
So.
Because as this commission, if the commission's opinion is we shouldn't have a grading ordinance, we would just strike that out of this draft.
I'm mixed.
So
through the chair,
yes.
Well, we can, you know, strike this out for the purposes of this workshop and conversation and table the grading piece for the larger conversation with the Board of Supervisors, right? Yeah. And so we've
and then
already,
bring it back.
Yeah, so the legwork has been done, so to speak. So if they want to include that, refine it, have it be a very, you know, for example, strict parameter, like it's only for residential commercial development or something like that, hypothetically, mm-hmm. right? So there's clear parameters, and I think that would be fine in terms of the process where that conversation happens at the legislative body level, right? Because again, the draft language is already, you know, somewhat presented, and
yeah.
that would be a comment then, right? This is what Planning Commission is recommending per, you know, this piece of grading, so it would be part of the, it can be a part of the larger discussion with them.
Right.
Yeah. Or Board Supervisors in the process of the information we've received, what have you informed them of as to where we're at?
Just high level, schedule, right? So there's been nothing that's been presented to them in terms of any deliverables, right? So we've really been working with just you all on the general plan and the zoning code piece, right? Because you guys are the subject matter experts. They don't really want to be a part of this conversation until most of the work is done here at this level, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, you are the subject matter experts. And so they're aware of where we're at in terms of the process, what we're working on, deliverables, you know, timeline. They know we're working on a draft zoning code. They know there's going to be workshops. They know in the future there will also be the scoping meeting and EIR process and all of that. So, you know, they're, again.
So there's ample opportunity for them coming in the future to be informed about this specific
thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That it just doesn't show up and, oh, please rubber stamp this.
Right, yeah. Right.
Not to proverbially beat the dead horse. On the grading, and I brought this up several meetings ago, it might have been while Mr. Dean was still here. I completely agree with Commissioner Hart's position on the potential impact of ag. Setting that aside for the moment, I also have firsthand experience of couple locations where, and I concur, Commissioner Lindler mentioned there are state laws that were also violated, but in the specific instance, we had roads cut in on DG, eroding into a stream for the sole purpose of nefarious activity, and even though it was reported to the state as violation, because they came back to supervisor, to sheriff, you don't have a grading ordinance, so obviously you don't care about it, so we're not going to do any enforcement on it. Yeah. And so it's a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to have federal, state drop the hammer on nefarious activity, I don't think they're right in saying, well, because the county doesn't have a grading ordinance, we're not going to enforce our own law. No,
mm-hmm.
You enforce the law that's on the book. But if that's what's necessary to promote public health, safety, and general welfare, then we do need to take a look at that. But I also agree, that's a political issue. Let the supervisors come up and direct you all, then show us.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a potential Pandora's box.
I think Vice Chair Lindler had it right, and Director Lang as well. We could do an ordinance or a draft to bring to you that just limited it to commercial, industrial, and residential type developments, and specifically exclude activities that are on AG1, AG2.
I would make sure the supervisors mm-hmm. direct you to do that.
Yeah.
Don't take it upon yourself.
Don't you have to describe how much yardage you're moving to put that into a grading ordinance?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, there's usually minimum thresholds where you need a
right.
permit, you know, so many cubic feet of disturbance.
Right.
But it a lot of times they are, you know, if you have a state permit, say in the case of like a forestry activity, mm-hmm. I wouldn't need a grading, so there are exemptions. But it depends on, you know, county by county, on what supersedes.
Yeah, there's got to be a difference between grading a road and creating a new road.
Yeah, well, and it depends on, even at that, it depends, like, in my line of work, what width of road. You know, one is considered a compatible use if it's standard. If you do a double lane with turnouts and really bring it up to 42... 91, then, you know, no, now it's a timberland conversion because you've exceeded the compatible use. So there's a lot of parameters. A road just isn't a road.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
But that would all be spelled out in whatever grading ordinance, yeah. how that worked. So, I mean, I'm not objecting to one,
yeah.
you know, just, but I do see
yeah,
the pitfalls.
Yeah, you're wanting more direction from top down, in this case, from Board of Supervisors.
Yeah.
That's totally,
because I was involved
yeah.
on the comment side back when the county,
sure.
because it is a scary it can be a very limiting, scary thing for business.
It can be dicey, that's fair.
Is there more on part?
I haven't got a problem with having grading ordinance. As long as agriculture is put into a separate category. But here's the real problem here. It's the eyesore on the side of the hill out there. Those are residential lots, and they're all claiming agriculture. So how do you apply a grading ordinance on the lot when you know what they're doing? And they're claiming agriculture, so the county has no jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. Well, under our code, right, I mean, there's legitimate agriculture, right? We talk about, well, these are the acceptable, I don't know what specific section right now offhand, but there are, right, but then agriculture that is a violation of federal law or in opposition of county code, I don't think that should have the same standing as established agriculture. Does that make sense?
Yeah, other than the county has tried at least four times, and they've lost four times in federal court over issues like that out there. It's going to have to happen.
Okay. So at a minimum, we've made note of the grading term reference, at least in this part. So. We'll regroup with county staff on whether or not that term retains and we keep it, or if this becomes a broader follow-up conversation with the county council and the board. Mm-hmm. Moving through the rest of summarizing of part two, we've also established a new optional, what we call a pre-application conference meeting. This is something that an applicant can do. They can request the time to go and meet with your planning director, with your planning department, and talk and discuss about the application before it's submitted. This is a really great opportunity for the county to relay any information that they may have, findings, recommendations on standards that applicants should look at before submitting an application. The intent here is just to provide some further information ahead of formal submittal. This provides transparency. This will eliminate this situation in which an application is submitted and there's not enough information for the county to submit it. And building this in as a optional pre-step in the formal proceedings was something that we felt would be extremely beneficial to fold in. We also then clarified the process, the existing process by which applicants can request a permit time limit extension. So this would be the execution of when a permit is supposed to take place. We've clarified that process by between which an applicant and the county can both agree to extending a permit time frame for an application. The next group of changes that I want to talk about before we get into the entitlements and permits themselves are deviations that one can apply for or request to certain permits or to certain standards. And there's kind of two that we have baked in. One is a state mandated kind of alleviation requirement. And that's called a reasonable accommodation request. This is a state mandated allowance in which those with qualifying disabilities can make a reasonable request to the county for an exemption of certain development standards. I would say the most that we see a reasonable accommodation coming out of is when there is a required wheelchair ramp and that needs to go into a setback, or some accommodation that would need to happen for a qualifying user to meet ADA requirements. The state mandates that you reasonably take that into consideration and allow that within your zoning code. The next non-state mandated process by which someone can request a modification to your development standards exists in what we call your minor deviation and your major deviation process. This is a best practice. This is not a state mandated practice, but something that you already currently implement. We've provided some further clarification and kind of have broken it up into now a minor and a major. The idea with breaking that up is that minor deviations, those would be defined as deviations to a standard that would not substantially change the nature, intensity, or operational characteristics of a proposed use. These would be minor in nature. The idea is that these would be approved upon request, and these would be approved at the planning director permit level. Anything that would not qualify as this major, so anything that would change or materially alter an approved land use, increase the scale or intensity, or expand the physical development of a proposed use, so kind of changing what was beyond would be reasonably expected beyond this code, would be considered a major deviation. That would have to go to the Planning Commission. But we built in kind of this newer process where things that aren't substantial in nature can go to the director. If the director feels that it is substantial or might be controversial, still falls within this minor category, planning director still has the ability to defer to the Planning Commission for their review. So we're still creating that off-road, that off-ramp structure where we can still send items to the Planning Commission if we feel it's necessary or useful. Now let's get into the actual entitlements themselves. And there are a total of, let's say, four permits that this code establishes, and then three other entitlements that one may have to apply for or go through in the application of your code. So we'll talk about the zoning clearance permit, an administrative use permit, a use permit, and then your vacation rental activity permit. Each of these four are separate. They have different application requirements, different review procedures, in some cases different review authorities. So let's first talk about your zoning clearance permit. For reference, this is in chapter, it starts on in chapter 1030. So your zoning clearance permit is essentially the codification of a practice that currently exists that your county staff goes through now. And this would be a ministerial permit, so it's not discretionary, it's handled at the staff level, in which county staff confirms the allowability of allowed land uses. So to confirm that what you are saying is allowed by right on your property, or what you're saying is established, it allows a permit process in which the county can take a look and go, yes, indeed, the use that you're applying for, the use that is listed allowed by right, you can actually have here. It's an administrative check that the county goes through. The county actually already goes through this process. Whenever a business license comes in, it will get routed to community development. Community development will take a look at the list of allowable land uses and go, yes, I confirm that this use is allowed, or that they have the proper entitlements in order to establish a use. Really, this is just codifying that process. So what this really translates to and what this would be required for, this would be required for new construction. Again, this is already a codified process. When a building permit comes through the county, your planning division will already take a look at that as part of its application review. This is just kind of now putting a name to that review process. And it also would apply to additions or anything that would require some sort of other entitlement permit or process, like a building permit, that would be routed through your planning division for review. And then this permit would also be required for changes in land use and for new development. But again, those are already captured by a building permit or a change of business licenses. So while this may sound like a new permit, this is really just an existing process that we are now attaching some clear structure for. So right now it wasn't currently clarified or non-existent. So some clarification on that. New uses or existing uses would not have to go and seek this permit. It's not retroactively applying or would have to seek this approval. This would be for new business licenses that come in. Of course, this would be a newer process that we're now establishing. And then certain minors and repairs or improvements may be exempt. Really anything that's not going to require a building permit wouldn't have to go through this round of review. And then the director, in this case, planning director, serves as the review authority. In case there is a controversial item or the planning director feels that it should be elevated, they have the opportunity to also bring these permits for the planning commission. However, these aren't discretionary. These are ministerial. So as long as you are complying with the standards that are established in the code, really the county will issue this permit as long as you're following the rules that are established in the procedures, something that is already being done procedurally. See, the next category of permits comes down to what we call your use permit types. And we have two different use permits, and these are different from your zoning clearance. Your use permits are discretionary. They have the decision maker of either the planning director or the planning commission. So for administrative use permits, the idea is that these would be required for actions or for the establishment of land uses that we have good standards for, that exist in the code, but the planning commission doesn't necessarily feel that uses need to come before them for review. The uses that feel that we may have increased conflict or that the county does want to apply some discretion or apply findings or conditions to, we would go and we would have that be a use permit. That's an existing process that uses have to go through. Now we go before the planning commission. Kind of some differences here is the administrative use permit is intended to be a streamlined approval process that some uses would qualify for. There would still be a notification to property owners within 300 feet, but there would be no public other public notice, so you wouldn't have to do a formal public posting as if you would, as if an item was coming before the planning commission. But notice would still be sent out to surrounding property owners that an administrative use permit was being considered by the planning director. Then a public hearing would not be required for these types of permits, but in the event that it is appealed, it would have to go through an appeal hearing. But these are, again, intended, administrative use permits are intended to be director level approved uses that can be elevated to the planning commission, but are intended to be streamlined, more cost effective for applicants. Uses that fall into that next criteria, that use permit, we're talking about those uses that would have to go to the planning commission. This is already a regular process the planning commission goes through. In here, we have our standard noticing procedures established by law. So 300 feet notice. Yes, sir.
Before you get too much further, I want to jump back to the AUP question for clarification.
Yes, sir.
It struck me a little odd. In the 1035-010 on the discretionary approvals portion, it has the statement that approval of an administrative use permit is subject to environmental review in accordance with CEQA. Is, and maybe this is a question for council, are we okay saying that an AUP that requires CEQA doesn't have to come before the commission? I thought any time we did a CEQA review, it had to come before the planning commission.
Through the chair, Haley Lang. So with CEQA, right, anything that's a project needs CEQA review. So that's really what that means. So for example, like our current administrative use permits for signs, right? There's the staff reports that, you know, we sign off on, the directors sign off on. There's still a CEQA review section. It's exempted though, right? We are okay. Just required by law to review under CEQA. However, you know, administrative use permits, the whole purpose of them is one, to streamline, and then also with the expectation that CEQA would be exempted. However,
so basically, if there's not an exemption, most likely we're going to see it.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I just wanted to be clear on that.
Yeah.
The way it was worded,
sure.
I get, hey,
yeah,
administrative, fine, we did it to streamline, but if it gets into nuts and bolts and having to come up with mitigation and findings.
Yeah, staff's not doing that, right?
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, I wanted to be clear on that.
Yeah.
Thanks. Go ahead.
On the public hearing to appeal, would they have to pay an appeal fee for that?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. All of our appeals.
Hmm. That seems a little.
We need to take a 5-minute break.
Yeah, let's take a break real quick. Till 10:35. Just a quick 5-minute break.
Okay. Thank you.